Well, hello, welcome to the United Federation of Style, a journey through the fashion of the future. Every week, we pick one episode of Star Trek to watch. We talk about the fashion, what it says about the people, the cultures, the technology, the style. I'm Matt Baum, pop culture critic. I know a lot about Star Trek and very little about fashion. And joining me?
Hi, I'm Samantha Ray, and I'm a fashion designer and Project Runway alum. I know a lot about fashion and not much about Star Trek.
And we are going to learn from each other. That's the goal, at least. We'll see. We'll see where we end up.
We can do it.
So this week, we are talking about Shore Leave, season one of the original series. Quick summary of this one is that the past 3 months have left the crew of the Enterprise exhausted and in desperate need of a break. But does this explain McCoy's encounter with a human-sized white rabbit, or Kirk crossing paths with the prankster who plagued his days at Starfleet Academy? The two, you know, just reading that summary, that's a summary that was like supplied by IMDb. And I'm like, I wish that my days in college were plagued by a human-sized white rabbit.
I would take the white rabbit over the, quote, prankster.
The prankster. We'll get into the prankster. We'll talk about.
At length.
The prankster. In fact, before we dive in detail, it's time first for the one big thing. Each of us pick one thing from this episode that really stood out to us. Samantha, what was it for you?
So my main thing that I took away from it was the yeomen. They just straight did not believe her when she was almost raped. Like, just a guy fully attacked her. Her clothes are ripped and she tells them what happened. And in like perfect Me Too fashion, they're like, are you sure you're not imagining it? It's like, what are you talking about?
After Bones has seen like a giant white illusory rabbit, and, like all this other magical stuff going on, they're like, yeah, but what about you? Like her, literally her uniform, like torn asunder.
Yeah. And she's in tears. She is hysterical. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, well, I don't know. You might be imagining it.
It's very much that thing. I know, like, I always talk about this, but when sci-fi predicts technological advances but fails to predict social advances, that it's so very, like, mid-century, like, well, I don't know, it might be an emotional woman.
Why do we have these on deck?
The one big thing for me was that the fantasy, so this is an episode all about people's fantasies coming true, and the fantasies are always so academic. Like, and this is just a Star Trek thing, is it's always something from, like, great literature. We have the power to imagine anything, and it's going to be something from a novel I read in high school. It's just some ridiculous thing about Star Trek where, you know, like, in real life, they would be some real, let's say, outre fantasies, some real strange imaginings if you could make anything happen. I'm like, where are the tentacles? So that's my question.
Look,
Star Trek
in general.
Look,
they were in the infancy of fan fiction.
Yeah, that's
true. You see, when a tentacle monster and a Spock love each other.
Yes. Yeah, it was very early technology in terms of slash fiction.
Yeah.
Still, it was just being invented at this moment.
Oh, and we'll talk about that.
All right, now let's dive into the episode in detail. We begin with Kirk on the bridge of the Enterprise. And you, like, when we were, like, watching this before we recorded, you texted me and you were like, this episode is very gay. And I was like, what am I in for?
It's so gay.
Like, do you want to describe, like, what is the scene here?
Okay, so what's very funny is, so I was watching it for the second time, and my husband walks through the room and he goes, oh, this scene. This is from a man who has not watched the series. But he's like, oh, I know this scene. And I was like, this is the scene that launched a million fan fictions. The show opens with Kirk being very gay for Spock and disappointed that it wasn't Spock rubbing up on him because the yeoman was doing it. And he was like directing him on how to rub his back. And then he's like, oh, it was a woman and not Spock rubbing up on me.
Yeah. So Spock is like just standing behind Kirk. Kirk's in his like captain chair, his very uncomfortable looking captain chair. Spock and the yeoman are behind him. And the yeoman, like, Kirk's complaining about his back and the yeoman starts giving him a massage. And Kirk is so happy about it. Like, oh, great job. Thank you, Spock. And then he turns and he sees that.
He's so into it until he's not.
And then, like, his whole demeanor, like, what I love is when he's like realizes that it was the lady standing behind him. He's like, oh, as you were, at ease, you know, whatever. He's like, get out of here.
Yep.
It wasn't my boyfriend.
And it's it's not like, I crossed a boundary with one of my female subordinates. No, it was that he was just fully disappointed that it wasn't Spock.
Yeah, yeah. And Spock's just, I love Spock giving him, like, the arched eyebrow, which, you know, is just his thing. But it's like, I can understand, like, why this is as important a scene as it is, because it's only, like, 7 seconds. But yes. It really establishes a dynamic.
It really does.
So the other thing that I noticed here is, like, Spock's, I think we've talked about this before, but Spock's eyes are so smoky. That, like, eyeshadow, he looks like he's ready for a night out at the clubs.
He really does. It's dramatic, like, yeah. Purposeful. It doesn't look like it's supposed to be, like, his skin color. It just fully looks like makeup.
Yeah, I mean, and it doesn't, if it was supposed to be skin color, like, there's something, like, he has, like, a thyroid problem or something. Like, there's something wrong. It really does look like, I don't know what to compare it to, but, like, I don't know, it's like something that would fit on Audrey Hepburn or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, or, like, it looks like a technique that goth kids use where they put tape, you know, to make the crease real sharp. They don't want to wear a winged eyeliner.
Yeah, yeah, he's just, like, very...
It's a little
just,
death rocker.
Right, yeah, it's kind of like is that fair to say? Like, it's kind of a gothy blue-purple sort of hue?
Yeah, yeah, it's funny.
We're going in detail on Spock's, like, eyeshadow, but that's what this show's about. Anyway, so they've just arrived at this lovely planet. They are contemplating beaming the crew down to take a shore leave because they are all exhausted from the last... few weeks of ridiculous hijinks or whatever they've been doing on the show. And this episode was actually written after Gene's doctor ordered him to take a vacation.
Shut up.
Yeah.
That's actually hysterical.
Yeah, so he'd been working, like, nonstop on Star Trek, but then before it, for a few years before it, he was doing this other show called, I think it was called Police Story or something like that. It was a cop show, because Gene used to be a police officer. So he was working for years on that and then got into Star Trek, which was very intense, and he was exhausted, and his doctor was basically like, you need to take a break. And so instead he had them somebody else wrote the episode, and then Gene had to do rewrites as they were going. So it sounds like it was not relaxing at all, but.
Oh no. Yeah.
So, like, he was doing the rewrites as they were shooting, according to, like, what I've read.
Sure.
The script came in. It wasn't great. Gene had been on vacation. And so literally they're on location in this, like, safari park, and Gene's just under a tree with a typewriter clacking away as fast as he can to fix the problems with the script.
Amazing.
And that is maybe why this episode, and we'll get into it, is not, I would not say this is one of the strongest.
It's got such a weird mishmash of things that they all think about, and it's very nonsensical.
You know, it does make sense to me that it starts, and again, we'll get into this, it starts with an Alice in Wonderland reference, because it really is just them wandering through visions. But we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
There's, right, right.
The planet is, there's an away team down already. They describe it as having no animals, no people, no worries. And I think it's Sulu and McCoy are down already.
Yep.
And it looks nice.
Sulu's got, like, that grin on his face. He's just, like, real...
I was watching it, and, you know, I don't want to ascribe anything, but I was looking at him and I was like, this is exactly what I look like when I don't want someone to know that I'm stoned.
I also thought he might have been under the influence, because he was just a weirdo the whole episode.
He was so strange. Look, Sulu is often very odd, but
extra weird.
He was very, like, what seems to be the problem officer the whole time.
Well, and even like, obviously we'll get to it, but when he gets his like thing, he's just even more nuts, and I'm like, is he on a bad trip? What is this?
Well, the bad trips start for everybody pretty quick, because immediately after Bones, like, radios up to the ship and is like, there's no animals, no people, no worries here. Suddenly he's like, it's like Alice in Wonderland. He turns his head and he sees a giant white rabbit. Like, full waistcoat and everything. Do you want to talk about, like, the look of this rabbit?
It is... So, you know those pictures that pop up every year of, like, scared children sitting on the lap of the sketchiest-looking white rabbit at the mall? Like,
yes.
He doesn't look like an Alice rabbit. He looks like a sketchy mall rabbit, and I do not trust him.
Yep.
He's a disaster. Like, he's got this plaid jacket and his, like, eyes are real sketchy, but then, like, his voice is real creepy. I don't know. It's terrible. And then yes. he's got, like, the inside of his ears are satin. So, like, he's obviously a costume. He's not a rabbit. Like, it's a very creepy choice.
So here's the backstory on that costume. This, of course, I was able to dig up the backstory on the costume.
I am so happy you did. Please tell me.
So the person inside the rabbit costume is their regular stunt guy who appears in a lot of the episodes. It's the same guy who's inside Gorn, one of the famous lizard monsters. And he was also a professional figure skater. And this costume was apparently borrowed from the Ice Capades. It was just of the Ice Capades rabbit costumes that he grabbed for an episode of Star Trek.
Sure.
Yeah.
Weird.
So weird, right?
That's very strange.
Yeah, and I don't know why, like, Paramount's costume department, I guess, just didn't have a rabbit. So, and I don't know how this happened. If they were like, could you just, like steal something from work, please?
Oh, my God. I love it. That's so random.
The other thing that I think is so great about it is that it is, I think we can canonically say, it is Star Trek's first furry.
Oh no. That also probably started a lot of fan fiction.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if that rabbit appears. Oh, and you mentioned the voice. He's got Edwin's voice. Edwin is the Uncle Arthur from Mary Poppins, the one who's like floating up on the ceiling. Oh, my paws and whiskers, I'll be late.
I thought that sounded familiar.
Yeah, okay, he's just doing Edwin.
Very familiar. Oh my gosh. What a weird choice.
It is
so weird.
It's such a decision. And, you know, I love anything that's like all like wall-to-wall decisions, choices, I love. And they made some choices.
They made so many choices. And, you know, the Alice in Wonderland also I thought was interesting because they went with the Disney version of Alice, which is blonde. Like, the Alice we know as Alice being blonde is because of Disney. As somebody who loves Alice in Wonderland, had All in the Golden Afternoon in my wedding vows and have two Alice tattoos, it's interesting that nobody ever goes with brunette Alice because she's based on a little girl named Alice Little who was a brunette. It's always just strictly white pinafore, blue dress, Disney Alice.
Yeah, it's so iconic. You know, I was just thinking because Winnie the Pooh, like as of this recording, Winnie the Pooh is 1 week away from entering the public domain. And
really? Yeah,
yes. So I was just thinking about like how people are going to make use of that and have to dodge around the Disney iconic look of the red shirt, no pants.
Yeah, because I mean, book Winnie the Pooh is naked.
Right. Yeah, that art is so lovely. And that, like,
it is.
I guess there's sort of a similar, like, I don't know if it's Victorian or Edwardian or whatever it's from, that style of drawing, that, like, line drawing look.
Well, and so we've got the Tennille version of Alice, which, you know, the original one with, you know, everybody's got big heads and they all look weird and it looks, you know, it's real pen and ink sketched. But my favorite Alice is Arthur Rackham. And it's real, like, kind of spooky and watercolor, real beautiful and dreamlike. And I want to see more of that, Alice.
Ooh, yeah. I'm not familiar with that at all. When is it from?
Oh, gosh. I think the 30s. Okay. And the book was out of print for years. And it was finally put back into print something like 10 years ago. My sister tracked it down. And I cried at Christmas because she got it. Because it's my favorite, Alice. I'll send it to you.
Okay, yeah. So, and the reason we're talking about Alice so much is because...
Yeah. Sulu Alice sees pops through.
The white rabbit, very, like, I guess timely for this viewing as well, because the Matrix just came out and there's some white rabbit stuff in there. And then Alice, like, chases after him. She's like, pardon me, sir, in, like, the very Hollywood
in
British
a whisket.
Accent. Yeah. It's very, like, Oliver. Pardon me, Dr. McCoy, have you seen the white rabbit?
Yes.
And so it's very like McCoy's does the like super cartoony like blah, 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 shaking his head like what?
And it was so weird.
Yeah.
Everyone's so cartoony in it.
It really is. Yeah. And so the mystery is afoot, I guess. Now our question is like, what's going on this planet where not everything is as it seems? So they're up on the bridge. Kirk and Spock are up on the bridge talking about sending everybody down to the planet. Oh, no, they're in Kirk's quarters talking about doing a vacation on this planet. Spock is resistant. He says to rest is to rest, to cease using energy. He doesn't want to recreate.
He doesn't understand a vacation for himself. Like,
yeah.
He can't fathom it making sense for him.
I guess, like, I wonder what a Vulcan vacation is like? Is it just like a meditation retreat? Because that also sounds kind of nice.
It does sound relaxing.
Yeah. I also have to call out, like, over Kirk's shoulder is this statue. Did you notice the statue?
I didn't. I was too busy noticing that Spock is willfully bullying Kirk.
Like a couple does. I don't know what to say about it. Maybe it's from another episode that I just don't remember, but it looks very like Legends of the Hidden Temple. It's like this
cursed.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a weird fertility looking thing. I don't know. It's holding what definitely looks like a... I just see dildos everywhere. It's holding what looks to me like a dildo.
Look, everything's a dildo. It's all dildos.
On the Enterprise. Anything. If you try hard enough.
God damn it. I didn't notice that at all. Huh.
And like you said, Spock's really bullying Kirk into taking a vacation.
Oh my gosh, the like reverse psychology of like, well, there is an employee or there's a crewman who has these symptoms. Mm-hmm. Oh really? Who is it? Oh, it's you.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Spock's got a little gotcha moment there.
Oh my gosh, it's hilarious.
And there's another little gay moment where Kirk is complaining about Spock trying to make him take the vacation. And he says he has some line that's just, it's very like, heh, naughty, where he goes, he wants to get me down there, but he's afraid I won't swallow it. I feel like that one, you know, I'm picturing Gene under the truffle of trees down on the planet, like typing away, like doing his revisions. And he's just like, you know, Gene, that line maybe could have used one more round of revisions on that one.
Or maybe
Gene was setting it up.
Did you watch Jesse Gender's really long video about sex in Star Trek?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh my God. It took me 2 days to watch. It is so good. But like, dude, that man was a pervert.
Gene?
He probably revised that several times and was like, yes, this is the choice. Because as we already decided, this episode is made of choices.
It sure is. Yeah, we're going to get into the fantasies soon. And it's just, Star Trek's, anyway, the sexuality of Star Trek is a complicated matter. I'm sure Jesse has already covered in more detail than we can.
It is such a good episode. Please watch it.
Okay. So then we cut down to the planet again, and they've got a few other crew members down there. This one guy is just scanning a fern over and over. He's, clearly someone told him, like, just do something with your hands and look busy. Yeah. And so his business is just like, I've just got to scan this fern.
It's weird because, what's her name? Because I looked her up because her name changes. It's, what is it? Oh, I can't remember. And it becomes like Martime or something like that. Her name's Angela. Anyway, she's just like super into him the whole time. Mm-hmm. And he's just like scanning stuff real hard.
It's another one of those like, you know, darling, you might be barking up the wrong tree here. Like, is every man on the Enterprise gay for each other? And also, I hate to be like a snob about lighting, but either they're on a planet that is orbiting 8 different suns or they're just lit really lazily because they have so many shadows.
Well, they're just like out in the woods. Like, it's obviously not a soundstage. They're just out in the park.
Yeah.
Or a zoo. Maybe they're in an empty zoo.
So actually, the place where they shot this was called Africa, USA. It was
a safari park.
It was actually, so what it was these folks who trained animals for movies were like, oh, we should have like a dedicated place for the animals that are used in pictures. So,
explains a later thing.
Yeah, yeah. They had 1,500 different animals in this big area. It's just north of Los Angeles. In the late 60s, and then it got wrecked by a flood. Almost none of the animals were killed in the flood. But they moved after the flood to some other location a few years. I think it was in the early 70s. And it became a SeaWorld. Like, over the decades, SeaWorld got involved somehow. So Africa USA went away and turned into something like SeaWorld Africa Safari or something like that, and then it just became SeaWorld.
So, interesting.
Yeah, it was a strange evolution of animal parks.
I found my note. The two other crewmen are Teller and Rodriguez.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Teller and Rodriguez.
But Teller is only named, her last name is only Teller in this episode.
So it gets a little confusing because she was actually supposed to be, if you've watched other episodes, there's a yeoman named Yeoman Rand. I think it's Janice Rand. The one with the really interesting, like, weave wig.
With the basket weave hair.
Yeah. So she, that actress, had a bad experience on the set and left the show.
I heard that in that video. That's terrible.
Yeah. So she was going to be in this episode, and then the actress departed. And so, what was her name? It was Teller? Something? Angela Teller?
It was Teller, and then it changed to, I think it was Martime, and then later it was Martime Teller.
Okay. Complicated woman.
Yeah.
Okay. So
she has very cute hair.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to talk about the hair? Because I remember thinking, like, it looked kind of, it looked sort of 2000s. Like, it looked a little.
It looks like the thing that I talked about in another episode of the idea of style revivals looking different through each lens. So, like, the 70s looked a specific way, but the 70s revival looked so different, but you could tell it was based on the 70s. Mm-hmm. It felt like futuristic 60s, but, like, not in a sci-fi way, just, like, in a normal girl hair kind of way. It was very cute.
Yeah, and from the back, like, I kept thinking, like, it looks kind of like wine mom or soccer mom kind of had it's that sort of look. But yeah, do you think it was her real hair or a wig? Like, I think it might have been her real hair.
It moved like real hair with product in it. Like, I'm not, another woman later, like, she obviously has extensions. And then, Yeoman Barrow, she's got her real hair. But yeah, I think it's just her real hair with a ton of product in it.
Hmm. Okay.
So, but yeah, she's cute. I like her.
So they're doing their thing. And meanwhile, Sulu's just kind of like bopping around and comes across a gun. It's the most random moment.
There's a rock. And it looks like those ice packs that are specifically for coolers that go on top of Coke cans. Mm-hmm. Like, it's got a perfectly smoothed out cylinder shaped hole, and it just lifts from the ground, and there's a gun.
Yeah, like an old timey, like, revolver looking, like an Old West style gun. And so some people are talking to each other, and they hear the gunfire, and everybody runs over to Sulu, and he's just, like, delightedly firing it at nothing.
Grinning like a lunatic.
Oh, yes. Yes. He is so happy.
He's high.
I don't want to say, I don't want to, like, definitely say that George Takei was doing anything untoward on the set.
Don't say that he was. Say that Sulu was, because Sulu's not real.
Maybe in addition to the gun, he also found a stash of drugs and decided that the next thing he should do is just pick up this gun that he randomly found. He's just shooting it across a lake.
I mean, he looks so happy.
He really
he's
does.
So happy.
He's so delighted. And they're like, really, what are you doing? And he's like, isn't it a beauty? I've always wanted one like this. It's the one model that's missing from my collection. And then they just keep going, but it's like, wait, you're what?
Yep. And then also, Kirk says, I'll hold on to this. The fresh air seems to make you trigger happy. And so he takes it and pockets it.
Yeah. Where does that gun go, by the way?
You can't have this. They have it later when they shoot.
Oh, you're right.
The thing.
There's another threat that emerges, like, several scenes later, but I guess Kirk's just carrying around a loaded pistol the whole time?
Sure, why not?
All right, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
Whatever, okay.
So, Sulu apparently is a gun? ? Collector?
Yeah. I mean, everybody's got their own thing they're into.
I guess. Yeah, so they rush over to Sulu, everybody's out of breath, and they remain out of breath for the entirety of the scene. It's very like, we're acting out of breath. And it's like nobody told them that they could catch their breath at any point. So they just remain out of breath for several minutes.
I feel like they're out of breath a lot this episode.
There is a lot of, like, running from one ecosphere to another.
Yes, very. It's the Hunger Games. It's fine.
And then somehow Kirk brings up, I can't remember what brings the subject up, but he talks about this guy that he knew in the academy, Finnegan, his roommate or something?
Yeah. And, like, not enough for you to understand what the implication is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
It just then becomes a thing.
Yeah, I think it was something like they were talking about how Kirk doesn't like to take vacation because he was very serious. And he was like, oh, I was also very serious in the academy. And there's this guy who would always play pranks on me, Finnegan. He would leave soup in my bed. And like, which isn't even like, is that a prank?
No, I think that's just being a dick.
That's just terrible. Anyway, so, Finnegan.
Finnegan.
And then he sees Finnegan. Finnegan just like jumps out from behind a tree.
He sure does. He jumps with flourish. I wrote, Finnegan is very gay, and he's wearing a sparkly Lurex shirt with like a daisy. This episode is so gay.
Yeah, so it's a Star Trek uniform, except sparkles everywhere.
It's
and a
so
flower.
Sparkly. Yeah, just like a pretty little flower. Like, pretty in a different way than the last flower one we liked. This kind of looks like a daisy brooch from, like, Claire's.
Mm. Yes, yes. It's, you know, it's real cute.
It's very cute. And it's because he's showing off.
Oh, yes, that's what it is. He wants Kirk to notice him.
Notice me, senpai.
And, I mean, how could you not? Because he is high energy.
Oh, my God. He is a lot. He is a theater kid.
That's the energy. Yes.
Yep.
It is. And it's very theater kid energy. And like, and today you're going to be a leprechaun. Because
he
is so Irish. They've made him
so Irish.
Yeah. First of all, the name Finnegan is just like a chain of Irish pubs. So he just has like that sort of thing associated with him. But also the accent, like he is just like fiddle-dee-dee, never buy me a pot of gold.
He sure is. And then like he keeps calling him Kirk baby.
Mm.
And I'm like, don't call him baby. There's room for one lech on this screen.
Yeah. And then he's like, and he just punches Kirk. Just like,
that's not
out,
a
like,
prank. That's not a prank. That's not being a dick.
Punching somebody is not a prank.
That's not a prank. That's not even close to a prank. And like, I love that the whole time, I think Kirk is supposed to be like grimacing menacingly, but you saw that picture I sent you where he's just like, ew.
It's a leer. It's not even menacing. It's just a leer.
And he makes that face every time Finnegan is on screen. Every single time.
It's super like across the bar. Like narrow eyes, open mouth. There's like a lot of tongue stuff going
on. You're right. I did send you that drink.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That is the look. They're both giving each other the look of like, did you get that drink I ordered for you?
Yes. And Finnegan will not stop licking his lips.
Oh my God. Yeah. The tongue stuff. Tongue stuff constantly. Oof.
Just this episode is so horny.
So Finnegan's like baiting him on and he's like, so to speak, and he's like, lay one on me. That's what you always wanted. And I guess he's like in the fiction of the script, he's trying to get Kirk to fight him, but it really just sounds like, come on, we missed our chance to make out back in college.
Mm-hmm. And he's like, I'm still young. Or does he say that later where he's just like, you're this age, but I'm still 20.
Oh yeah. No, this is like a little bit later where he's like, you've aged, but I'm still 20. And I'm like, okay, first of all, this actor, that is a stretch to say. He's supposed to be 20? All right, sure.
No,
Finnegan.
No way. Okay.
Tell me another. Anyway, yeah, so he's really, like, trying to lure Kirk along. Meanwhile, there's I think this is when the yeoman is left alone and we hear her scream.
Yep, so I wrote, Barrows is attacked and her clothes are torn. And they're like, are you sure that you're not imagining this? And she's just trying to collect herself. And she's got like three traumas in this episode. And I'm like, you guys are terrible coworkers.
Yeah. Not supportive.
No. And I think it was her with McCoy. And then like, you know, seconds later, he's flirting with her, whatever. It's so stupid. Yeah. So it's like, oh, well, you're lying about this assault, but like, want to go out maybe and make out with tongues. but so, you know, Kirk comes up. And he's like, where, if this person exists, where is he? And Sulu, McCoy's like, Sulu's chasing after him. And so he's chasing after Sulu, who's chasing after a would-be rapist, and he stops to pick a flower like a weirdo.
Oh, yeah, it's super weird. So, like, the ensign or yeoman or whatever she is like, I was thinking about Don Juan, or someone's like, oh, the man that attacked you sounds like Don Juan. Mm-hmm. Sulu's gone.
She said, a girl deserves a Don Juan.
Yeah. great gender politics in this one. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Kirk like starts chasing after wherever Sulu went, and then runs. He like runs over a hill, and suddenly he's in a desert. Like he fully moves. He like ran from a jungle into a desert. So either like a hard edge to the ecosystem, or he just ran for a long time.
Yeah.
And then he sees the flowers and he's like, oh, I've forgotten everything because I'm just really admiring these like plastic flowers from Michaels that somebody has.
Oh my
like,
God, they look so fake.
They really do. They're, yeah, like all the plants are like clearly like potted plants that have just been like positioned behind rocks so you can't see like the plastic pot that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
So Kirk's got a flower, and then he sees not Sulu at all, but a woman that we've never seen on the show. Like, but he responds like we're supposed to know who she is.
I mean, you got to assume that if Kirk sees a woman, it's because he was thinking about her.
Yes.
I mean, he was left like unsatisfied by Finnegan earlier. So he's thinking about other
and
things
Spock.
That make him horny. Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh man. Just dissatisfaction the entire episode.
Yeah. So he sees, I think he says her name. He says like, oh,
it's Ruth.
It's Ruth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And she is in quite an outfit.
I love it. It is such a weird outfit. So she's got these triangle earrings that are like three stacked triangles going like point side down, mm-hmm. and it's alternating black and white.
Mm-hmm.
Those are really cool. Love them. I feel like if they weren't paired with anything else she was wearing, they wouldn't be 60s.
Mm-hmm.
They're just cool earrings. And then her outfit is split down the middle. Center front, black on one side, white on the other, and she's got tangible flowers and printed flowers. So mm-hmm. she's got like printed flowers on one side, tangible flowers on the other side, and like half of her outfit is one kind of like wrap dress thing. It's like a split trapeze dress over like a romper almost. Like it's got legs under
a combination.
And I'm trying so hard to describe it. Look, people at home, I just look it up. It is a look. And then she's also wearing mismatched shoes.
Oh, I didn't notice the shoes.
Oh my God, I love it. And then her makeup is so 60s. Like, that's the thing that took me out of it was it's this very weird, very like, it's such a strange outfit that it doesn't necessarily have a time, but the hair and the makeup is what makes it so 60s. Mm. She's it's like straight up Zsa Zsa Gabor hair.
Mm. Oh yeah, I did notice the hair. Like, it has so many like swirls and things pinned in the back.
So many extensions.
Yeah.
And another like pinned braid, just like Vina. Like mm-hmm. it's that braid headband that we're all used to in the future, I guess.
It does look a lot like someone was like, just get like 7 or 8 wigs and see what happens when you combine them.
Yeah. Yes.
And like same goes for the dress, honestly. Like get 7 or 8 dresses and see what happens. Get like a little bit of a pantsuit, a little mm-hmm. bit of a cape. There's so much
stuff.
Yeah,
it's lace, and then the overdress thing is sheer.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I love the like tangible flowers up top, the printed flowers on the bottom. And she just herself is very cute. Like she's got that cute little like upturned nose. She's very adorable.
Mm-hmm.
But also we don't know who she is.
Now we can imagine like it's safe to assume she's somebody from Kirk's past, maybe from Academy times, who knows.
Mm-hmm.
What, like, if you were just to look at this costume, like, does this tell you anything about, like, her position or her station or anything? Like,
I mean, you would think that if she was from the Academy, he would be imagining her in an Academy outfit, right?
It's super not a uniform.
No. And so, is she like a performer? Because this is a lot of outfit.
It does look kind of like, I don't know, like circus trapeze artist sort of vibe. Like, it's just very hard to, like, read what this outfit says about who she is.
Yeah, it's confusing, for sure.
I guess the hair kind of says society lady to me.
Yeah, but, like, she doesn't look old enough to be a society lady that would have that hair.
Do you think, like, is this a debutante look?
Ooh, maybe. Space debutante.
Yeah, I'm really into that. Space debutante.
Okay, like, you know what? I'm in.
She's the daughter of, like, some sort of, I don't know, they don't have money in the future, but she's from a very important family. They're very, let's say, space rich, whatever that
yep.
means.
Yep.
And she's making her society debut in this dress with, like, the printed flowers, the mm-hmm. real ruffly flowers, the mismatched shoes, which I guess that's just how the future is.
I'm so sad you missed the mismatched shoes, because that was one of my favorite touches. I loved it.
I feel like bad for that actress, like having to walk around out in this like desert environment in two different heels. Like,
it's pretty great. Been,
yeah. Yikes. Oh, the desert environment, I should mention, is the one that you will recognize from like a million different movies and shows whenever they have to go to the desert. It's in Bill and Ted. It's in the Flintstones. It's in seven different episodes of Star Trek. It's this one particular rock outcropping formation that looks kind of like the Lion King, where these rocks are just like slightly pointed to the side. It looks kind of like Pride Rock. But you always see it every time a show or a movie has to do, like, desert. Interesting desert background. So it's those.
I mean, at least they know how to get to it.
Yeah, that's true. It's close.
They don't have to keep scouting new locations. I don't know. Yeah. I did want to point out, too, that I noticed that Kirk has no chemistry with her.
Oh, yeah. No.
Yes. None. Even when she is actively trying to kiss him, he looked like he wanted to lick Finnegan's entire face. He looks he doesn't care that he's like, oh, yeah, I recognize you. But
yeah, it felt like, like we were saying before, like the debutante kind of thing, like we're at a society event and it's like, I've got to be nice to this ambassador's daughter.
Yes. Yes. Very that it just so, it was so I went back and watched it a couple of times because I was like, I'm not just like imagining this, am I?
They had this very weird thing. Like, right before it goes to commercial, she, like, goes in for a kiss, and they miss, and they just, like, rub cheeks. It's such a weird embrace. They're, like, hugging.
It's very strange.
They're rubbing their cheeks together. I'm like, this is not anything anyone does.
No, not at all. Like, no.
So that very gets weird. Us to commercial. So we're back now, act two, I guess, of the show. And it's, I think, McCoy and Lieutenant Rodriguez. Mm-hmm. Just kind of like looking around, trying to figure out what's going on this planet. Sulu. No, it's not Sulu. Spock radios down from the ship and he says, we've detected some sort of industrial activity coming from inside the planet. We don't know what it could be, but we're continuing to monitor. So we have some sense that like something's up. Mm-hmm. And then the
have we seen the antenna at this point?
Oh yeah, I forgot the antenna. Every so often we'll see somebody walking around in the distance and like one of the main characters, and this thing flips up in front of the lens very close up, like we're seeing from the POV of like a ray gun or satellite dish.
It looks like one of those like big weird antennas that's on like a trailer out in the desert in a movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's like one of those.
It reminded me of a giant moth's antenna. Like, it just had feelers and things.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so something's monitoring them. There's something technological going on here that they're just not aware of. The yeoman, whatever her name is, like, holding her costume together at this point. This poor woman, like, it is fully torn on the shoulder. And she, like, has to, like, hold it in place, which cannot have been pleasant.
No.
But then, fortunately, she sees a change of costume. Suddenly is provided.
What does she say? Like, a lady deserves to, like, feel like a princess and have a, like, big hat or something like that. Like, she describes
a big hat.
She keeps, like, saying, a lady deserves whatever. And mm-hmm. it's... So, Bones has a little bit of eyeshadow.
Mm-hmm.
Which I was like, stay out of Spock's supply. But he's fully playing dress-up with a coworker.
Yeah, that's like, true.
He's talking her into trying on clothes from a cosplay tree.
Yeah, so like this tree, I guess it's related to the bra tree from...
I mean, it's gotta be.
From the pilot. she just sees a princess costume like hanging on the tree. Like it just grew there.
And he's like, you should try that on. And it's like, oh, gross, dude. Like, that's your coworker.
You should try it on. Yeah, so Bones like just... kind of like turns his head so she gets some privacy while she puts the princess costume on.
Oh, and what was that line he says where she's just like, you can't peek? And he's like, I only peek in a professional capacity. And he doesn't turn back to look at her, but he smirks.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, you're so gross.
Yeah, it's just extraordinarily lecherous, even for this show.
Yeah.
One other weird thing that I want to point out here, and I don't know what to make of this, it's just something that caught my eye, is this one scene in particular has an incredibly weird camera blur where it looks like a Photoshop filter. If you look at the background behind Bones, there's this camera blur that looks like a Photoshop radial blur. Like someone just put radial blur on the background.
Oh,
behind him. And
weird.
I was just like studying it, trying to figure out what was going on there. I don't know. I don't know the deal. I have to guess they were using cheap lenses. That's my best theory for that. And I've never seen it anywhere else in Star Trek. So
no, well, I mean, and it looks like that privacy glass from like a shower.
Oh, it does. Maybe that's what he's like. That's the privacy he's giving her. The planet has generated some privacy glass.
I don't know. This planet seems kind of sexist. I don't think they would do that.
So she comes out fully like princessed out with like the big cone hat and everything.
I loved it. I thought it was beautiful. It kind of reminded me of, you know, that old Romeo and Juliet that we all saw in English class.
Oh,
from like the 70s. Like it reminded me of that. And I loved it. And I loved the hat. I feel like a lot of those kind of like period costumes don't utilize a hat enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the hat.
It is real cute. It's got that like sort of diaphanous flowing thing from the, I don't know what to call it, but like, am I remembering correctly that it was like a double pointed hat?
So it was a point and then it had like kind of two prongy bits at the top. So it was like, it looked like a, almost like a stereotypical princess hat, but a little bit more historically accurate.
Oh, did they like, what was the, was there some deal with like why they needed prongs? Like, did the prongs mean something or is it just the style?
Decoration.
Sure.
Just to be extra.
Okay.
I mean, if you're wearing a hat that dramatic.
That's
anyway,
true.
I really liked it. I liked how it fit her. I loved the sleeve petals. It was very cute.
Mm. Oh, that's right. Yeah, the sleeves. They had this nice sort of like flowery sort of like, I don't know what to call them.
Yeah, they look like just flaps? Little like. Yeah, like little petals or whatever. And what I liked about it, too, was they actually took the time to put bias around each edge to kind of give it that, like, gray outline. It was really cute. They did a good job.
It reads
I bet
really
it was
nice
from
screen.
Some other production that had a really good budget.
Yes. Almost definitely was from some other show.
It was also like stolen from Ice Capades.
Honestly, I would not be shocked. Very like Star Trek, being thrifty about, like, where their source of their costumes from.
Yeah, I loved it.
So they just kind of hang out for a while. She's all princessed up. McCoy's into it. And then we hear some drums.
Oh, my God. Sudden tiger.
Yes. Out of nowhere, a tiger appears. Like an actual living, walking around tiger.
Well, and when you told me that it was this, like, African adventure thing and it was for animals, I was like, oh, that's why the tiger has a chain around its neck.
Yes. So this wasn't just, like, stock footage. This was actual, like, that they found. This is one of the actual animals that happened to be at Africa, USA, that they were able to use.
That stressed me out. I didn't like seeing a tiger with a chain around its neck. But Rodriguez and Teller are like snuggled up in a way that I don't think coworkers should be.
Oh, that's
like,
right.
Like she's all, she's real damsel-y. The women are real damsel-y. And like the men are just like, I'll protect you. And it's like, dude, they went through the same training as you. Make them use their own gun.
That's true. You know, it really is. It's true. Like, it's still women as like secretary, basically, and men doing like the physical jobs. And it's something that Star Trek really didn't get around to getting right until like a little bit with DS9 and then more recently with Discovery.
Like, if it was that she was smaller than him, I understand. But like, again, she went through the same training as you. I'm pretty sure they have the same rank.
I would have loved it if she like protected him. That would have been so much better.
Oh, my God. Just like tiny little dynamo.
Mm-hmm. She's like, get behind me.
They are snuggled up a couple of times. I'm just like, this is weird. Stop it. That's not how you work.
Yeah. So Tiger gets the somewhat lamentable jungle drum beat as he's like prowling around. And then I can't remember how that bit ends. I think the tiger just like wanders away.
They run away.
Okay.
And I think they like zoom out on the tiger just kind of like pacing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And then a sudden samurai.
Yes. And then we get a very different music cue.
Uh-huh. So, a very ethnically appropriate. No, it. Come on, stop it.
There's a riff. There's a riff.
Yeah.
Sulu has encountered a samurai out in the desert.
Of course he would. Of course he would. And it's from another one of our favorite. A naturally occurring trapdoor.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah.
Just like just a stupid plastic flat rock opens up and then a samurai jumps out and starts chasing Sulu.
Great. That's where they come from. And then I can't remember. I think he just like evades and runs away. Oh, that's right. He runs into Kirk and he's like, Captain, Captain, there's a samurai. Mm-hmm. Everyone's kind of befuddled by that. And then finally, Spock arrives. Spock beams down to be the voice of reason.
And it takes a long time for him to, because the...
It's a slow beam down, yeah.
Well, and it's the power is jammed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right,
so
right.
So now they're stuck.
They can't use the communicators. They can only beam very slowly. They're stuck here. There was going to be, actually, there's a missing scene. McCoy was going to have a little scene where he encounters Don Juan and fights him. It actually appears in the trailer for the episode, but it just got little snip, got pulled out of the episode.
Well, they do encounter him again later.
Yeah, he appears like momentarily, ever so briefly.
To prove that she wasn't imagining it.
Right, right. Finally, they're like, well, I guess now we have to believe.
Well, we laid eyes on him, so obviously she's telling the truth because we saw it.
Mm.
Yeah, get out of here.
So then Spock comes down. He's like, I couldn't get in touch with you, so I had to beam down, and now I'm stuck here. The planet's weird. That's my report. The planet's weird. We haven't figured it out yet, but let's all get back together and meet up with the rest of the crew and not do the horror movie thing where we'll go off in our own direction.
Well, and before your next point, like, so we, Bones and Barrows are holding hands now.
Oh, are they?
And I was like, are they dating or is he just a weirdo? And I had to look it up and like, this is the episode where he woos her. And I was like, by bullying her into playing dress up for him? What was the 60s?
there's a very specific circumstance under which that would constitute wooing for me. Like, I can see like some sort of like agreed upon scene where you're like, all right, now I want you to like really humiliate me with a costume. That's my thing.
Would make sense if they're going on to a vacation planet.
Sure.
But none of that is stuff we see. So who's written fan fiction about this?
Yeah. So, yeah, they I guess I didn't even notice that they're holding hands.
Yeah, it was. I was like, wait, hold on. Yeah, she's just like swaying around in her princess dress and they're talking about stuff walking through the woods.
Aw. Aw. And then the moment is interrupted, alas. I think like the crew all like are assembled together now.
They're meeting up where they were like originally. They're supposed to rendezvous.
Yeah, yeah. And then for some reason... Again, like they're talking about something and a knight on horseback appears.
A lady needs to be protected.
Oh, that's right. That's
There's
right.
There's suddenly a knight.
Yes.
And he's just like, well, this isn't real, so it's fine.
Yeah.
And then it is real.
Yeah. McCoy's like, don't worry, lady. Get out of the way. This knight, he's like on horseback. He's got a lance. It looks pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
He charges McCoy. And then we get a tasteful edit. McCoy is, I guess, pierced with the lance.
He got stabbed.
Yeah.
Right in the chest.
So much for McCoy. He's dead.
Oh, well. And then they totally resurface that gun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The gun's back now all of a sudden.
They shoot him with Sulu's mystery gun.
It does seem like a little unfair that the knight on horseback has a big stick and Kirk has a gun.
It makes me think of that episode of The Simpsons, I see you've played Knifey Spoonie before. I see you've played Lance Gunn before.
This is around the point in the episode where I'm like, where is this episode going? Because it just feels like we're getting one string of visions after another. And I don't feel like we're in any place all that different from where we were when we began.
Yeah. It is a weird... Okay, so because so many things are happening, it doesn't feel as long as the other episodes, and they're all long. They're all like an hour. And because so much weird stuff is happening, I feel like I've got whiplash.
Yeah, it's just like one weird thing. It's just, what if we saw a bunch of weird things? Like, that's the whole premise of the episode. What if we saw something weird?
What if we got all of the costumes we could wrangle from everyone's side jobs
and
made an episode about it?
I wonder how much the episode was written around the costumes they knew they could get. So the knight is dead now, and they discover that he actually wasn't a person at all. It was just a mannequin inside the knight's costume.
Yeah, what did I write? The knight looks like a greasy mannequin. He's a plant-based doll man? Why is the makeup so creepy? Like, he just looks, he looks wet.
Yes.
He looks waxen. Mm-hmm. And, like, his makeup is so creepy.
It's very, like, doll-like. Like, he's got these ruby red lips.
It's so creepy. And it look, it's not even like wet. Like it almost looks like petroleum jelly on everything.
Yeah, he looks slimy.
Oh, so gross.
And I do think it is like an actual human actor who's just like lying there and had like makeup applied to him.
Yeah.
But he's got
would they choose that though?
Just like surely you had an actual mannequin lying around. Just use the actual mannequin. Put that in there if that's what you want to get across.
Well, and then Kirk like pokes him and his skin retains that finger. Oh, so gross.
It's like one of those like space age mattresses that is so soft and has like the special foam.
Podcast mattress.
That's yes, it's a podcast mattress was inside the knight's costume. We're sponsored by this planet. So Kirk pokes him and Spock gets maybe a little jealous. And Spock is like, it seems as though everything on this planet is being manufactured. Everything is made out of some sort of like biological, I don't know,
like
substance.
Like planty kind of, yeah.
The plants, the people, the hallucinations, they're not hallucinations. It's all real stuff that's being made for us. But we don't know why.
Yeah.
And then Finnegan appears again to leap around and...
Before that.
Yeah.
Teller and Rodriguez are running away from, I think it's the Tiger, but they're running. Oh, or no, they're running from the World War II fighting planes.
Oh, God, I forgot about the planes.
The plane.
Yeah.
And like he's telling her about them and how they shoot stuff and how they get people on the ground. And she's like, don't tell me this. And then it starts like shooting. And I wrote, they went to the Prometheus school of running away from things. And she fully runs face first into a tree like a dumbass.
Yeah. Like the running away. They're like, what if we ran in exactly the direction the thing is chasing us?
And then she runs into a tree and like knocks herself out.
Yes.
And then the scene ends.
Yep. I mean, that's one way to end a scene. Like if you're ever writing something and you're like, how do I end this? Yeah, I'll just have them run into a tree.
Pass out.
They'll pass out. They're dead.
They'll wake up in another chapter. It's fine.
Yes. So, yeah. So they're not doing great. Also, those planes, they're like cutting between them and stock footage of planes. And the planes are different on every single cut.
They sure are.
Like different like design, different stickers on the side. I'm sure they're not called stickers, whatever. Different.
Oh, my
like,
God. A plane sticker.
You've got like, I don't know, honk if you're horny stickers on the side of the plane.
Look, we know about planes. OK, we're experts.
Yeah. It's not an aviation podcast. Yeah. So they're not doing great. Finnegan pops out to lure Kirk again. And Kirk's like not much chemistry with Ruth. But the moment he sees Finnegan, he's like, see you later, Spock. I'm out of here.
Oh, yeah. So he's taunting him and being very gay and very wacky. And he like runs away. Kirk does a sprightly leap over a rock. Like he kicks his legs to the side instead of going around the rock. Mm-hmm. Finnegan kind of looks like Cary Elwes.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah, I see it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so this fight is very homosexual and very long. They're fighting. Finnegan flips Kirk over.
Yes. Yeah, I know
Kirk's
what you're going
leading up to. Kirk's shirt is fine.
Yeah.
Then they pan back to Finnegan.
Uh-huh.
And then they pan back to Kirk and his shirt is half ripped off.
Very
like,
thoroughly
like,
ripped.
Yeah, like an entire half of his shirt is missing from him lying on the ground and Finnegan won't stop licking his lips.
Yes. My note for the scene is this fight is so tactile.
It is.
They're grappling each other so hard.
They really are. They just, it is the least heterosexual fight I think I've seen in a long time.
And then I love the magic shirt rip in the cut. Like my headcanon
for that? It's nonsensical.
What I want to believe is like, so we're looking like Kirk flips around. We go to Finnegan, we go back to Kirk and the shirt is ripped. I want to believe that like while the camera was on Finnegan, Kirk like reached up and just ripped it himself. To be like,
or,
look what you've done.
I've got a better theory. Everything they imagine is coming to fruition. So he's wishing that his shirt was ripped.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
This is Kurt being like, oh, whoops. Oh, my top is torn.
Oh, no. I'm so exposed.
Oh, and yes. And like fully, like he's got, it's a very nice, like toga style outfit now.
Because
we definitely have
ripped.
Like.
It's
clear
not
view
rock
of
ripped.
One nipple.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yeah, it is artfully ripped.
Mm-hmm.
It is like not a fight rip. It is not this got snagged on a rock. This isn't he pulled it while I ran away. Mm-hmm. It was, oh no, my clothes.
Yes. I'm just imagining, like, Kirk lying on the ground being like, oh, no, my clothes. And he looks down, it's intact, and he's like, oh, no, my, rip my clothes.
See, and I'm imagining it's more like Food Wars, like he just ate some really good food and his clothes burst off of him.
That, also good. Look, that, you know, I'm down for that planet.
There you go. All right, we're changing the game at the end. We're not going to do jury duty. It's going to be, what would you wear on this planet?
What would you wear on this? Yeah, honestly, I like that question.
Yeah, okay.
So anyway, now they're like just sitting there, like panting in the desert, licking their lips at each other, rubbing their faces. Ugh. They keep doing this thing where they're like, I don't know if it's like the fight gesture, but yeah, they're like rubbing their chins and like, it would make sense if they were bleeding from, like, they had a cut lip and they had blood
on
their lip.
And he's only got the one corner of SpaghettiOs blood, and mm-hmm. that's it.
Yeah, but he keeps, like, wiping his lips at
Kirk. Yeah, it's
so I'm, so like, weird. And meanwhile, I'm fanning myself. But, so Finnegan's kind of, like, taunting him again. He's like, didn't you always want to do this? Didn't you always want to punch me? I'm so young and virile still, and you're an old man, and you never got the chance to, like, really give it to me good. And Kirk finally knocks him out, punches him in the face. Finnegan is out cold. And it's sort of, like, it's becoming clear. I mean, honestly, it's been clear, like, this whole episode. We're just waiting for the characters to figure out what's obvious, that this is a planet that generates your fantasy. And mm-hmm. I was thinking, like, man, Kirk has been holding this grudge for so long. This guy from the Academy, from whenever, however long ago that was. I mean, this is like, I was like, I don't really give a shit with the people who I disliked in college, like what they're doing now. I've got enough problems. I've got enough people in my own life that I'm like, oh, I wish I didn't have that person in my life. Like, I don't need to like dwell on the people I don't have in my life anymore.
No, he didn't hate him. He clearly loved him.
That's true. That's, you know, if we, I would like to think, if this episode was remade, like, on Discovery today, it would start with a, my rival Finnegan, I hate that guy, grr. And by the end of the episode, I think a show of today could get us to the place. I think this is a Lower Decks episode, what I'm describing.
A
show of
today
could get us to a place where the characters realized, oh, we actually just really were into each other. We wanted to bone.
Oh, Lower Decks, make it happen.
Yeah. So, anyway, so I just found it kind of, sorry to say, Kirk, kind of pathetic that he was holding on to this, like, teenage grudge from mm-hmm. years earlier. And, like, I just always wanted to knock that guy out one last time.
It is pretty silly.
So then he runs back. I think, I don't know if him and Sulu or it's just Kirk by himself or whatever. But he runs back to the group and he runs by the samurai. And the samurai's, like, waving the sword around. And Kirk just, like, fully runs past him and, like, knocks him over.
It's no, like, bye. like they forgot how to wrap up the samurai, so they just like had him in like 1 second, and we're just like, okay,
he just,
that's
like,
it. That's
hip checks
that's
him into
with.
A rock. Yeah, or it's yeah. like one of those Black Friday videos where it's like somebody that's like running through a store and just like slams him into the side of the display.
yes,
so
absolutely.
So much for the samurai.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're back with the group, and I may be wrong about this, but the torn tunic is back, and I think it's torn on the other side now.
I didn't notice that, but
I may just be making
that up. I believe
you.
I don't know.
It's also
possible
they flipped something, like optically flipped it for production reasons. That's
sure.
Yeah.
Well, and she returns her dress to the cosplay tree. That was very nice of her. Very thoughtful. Mm. And when she does that is when Don Juan shows up.
Oh, right. Yes. Then we get the Don Juan.
And he tries to kidnap her.
Yes. He like grabs her and like is pulling her away, right?
Yeah. She's just trying to return her costume. Ugh.
It is a little distressing because he's like a big guy. He's
a
got,
big dude.
And it's like this very nice, like very like cardinal ruby red outfit that I thought it was a good looking outfit. But I'm like, hey, hands to yourself.
Yeah. And then everybody sees and they're like, oh, yeah, okay, well, let's stop him.
Yeah, right. And I guess, like, is this her fantasy? I don't know that, like, getting dragged away, but maybe it is. Maybe this is her thing. She's like, I just want somebody to, like, rough me up and drag me off.
I don't, according to Psychology in Seattle, I think it's like 20% of women have that fantasy.
Oh, okay.
So,
all
something
right.
like, I don't know, some statistic that I heard recently, and I was like, that's more than I thought. That stresses me out.
I feel like this is something that Counselor Troy could unpack. Like a
Get
good ship's
it.
Counselor is needed to let's discuss your Don Juan abduction fantasy.
Yes.
I feel like this might be interfering with your duties. Anyway, so they chase Don Juan away. He's only the briefest appearance for him. Mm-hmm. And then some grandpa arrives.
the caretaker.
Yes. He's wearing, like, again, it's like a very nice, like, kind of a simple outfit for this episode.
I really liked it. I love the embroidery on it. I think it's really beautiful. And it actually, it sort of reminds me of all the things about Shadow and Bone that I like.
Mm.
Just intricate embroidery, beautiful saturated colors. Love it.
Yeah, it's like a really nice sort of teal, right? With some sort of like brown plant patterns, like all up the sides.
Yeah, and like little bits on the sleeves. It's very pretty.
Mm-hmm. So
he's kind of a creeper to Yum and Barrows.
Oh, yeah.
He like touches her face.
Right, right. Oh, yeah. So it's just at the moment where Kirk is like, okay, this planet is generating our like fantasies. Anything we think about comes true. So everybody just stand at attention. Don't think about anything, which is a terrible idea because the moment you say don't think about anything, that's when you think about the worst thing you possibly could.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Ghostbusters problem, isn't it? Like, don't think about anything dangerous. Oops, I thought about the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So they, like, wipe their minds, which apparently, like, their Starfleet training has prepared them to do. Mm-hmm. Grandpa Tunic arrives, and he's like, this was all supposed to amuse you. Sorry, we thought you'd like it.
Well, also, like, you didn't ask us, guy.
Like, right. Yes. Consent. We nobody consensual vacation. Consent.
What is happening?
Yeah, non-consensual vacation. That's
what are you getting out of it? What is happening? Are you feeding on my life essence?
Also, like now that he's made it explicit, like this is the deal with the planet. It's a planet where fantasies come true. I have some time here to reflect as a viewer to be like, boy, your fantasies are not great, people.
No.
Like, you had a fantasy. I mean, I get like the woman that you felt like Kirk's like this lady that I fell in love with and never had a chance to do anything with, but have no chemistry with. Mm-hmm. I get like the Academy guy, my college friend who I always wanted to hook up with, but never did. Okay, that's cool, but that's not actually in the text. And then the fantasy's like, I've always fantasized about being shot by a World War I plane. Yeah. What is that guy's deal?
I don't know. And like the dress up one was fine. Mm-hmm. But, like, I feel like maybe Sulu didn't want to get chased by a samurai. He just
what
wants to
that?
Hang out and play with his gun.
Is, like, I feel like this was just, like, some racist writing where they're like, oh, well, he's Japanese, so he's always thinking about samurais. What?
Yes. Like, my husband walks through the room again, and he's just like, oh, this is kind of racist, huh? And I was like, yeah, a little
bit. Even without the riff, yes. Like,
yeah, oh, that. that every, oh, and they still. They still do that on like modern Law and Order. Don't do that.
Do they?
Like, if there's an Asian thing, they use Asian music in so many shows. And I'm like,
oh boy.
Ugh.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
This
no,
is exhausting.
Not that. Not that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I don't approve of these people's fantasies, is what I'm trying
to
say.
No, they're dumb. They're dumb and they need to do better. But I mean, like, to be fair, McCoy eventually sort of does better in a totally batshit way, but.
Oh, yeah. Okay, let's talk about this.
We'll get. Oh, my God.
Yeah. So basically, whatever they imagine, well, whatever their fantasies are, comes true. This is what the planet grandpa, what is he called? I almost called him the crypt keeper. That's not his name.
Oh, the caretaker.
The caretaker. The caretaker explains everything, which is, it's kind of just like the pilot episode. It's like they're back on Rigel or whatever planet it was.
Yeah.
But instead of like, you're in a zoo now, it's just, it's nice. We're nice about it.
Well, and he's like going down the line and he's explaining to all of them. And he's like being real like manly. Like he's, you know, patting shoulders and shaking hands and doing whatever. But he just like fully caresses the Yeoman's chin in such a gross way. And I'm like, don't touch her. Don't touch her.
I mean, he's treating her like she's at the Westminster Dog Show or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, gross.
It is, again, like this very unpleasant old man. And like the touch. The
that
touch.
Down home 60s sexism. That's just yuck.
Anyway, so basically it was all a dream. And Kirk's like, but what about my friend, the doctor who you killed? And then that's when we get another music cue. It's the saucy saxophone. That's what we hear, like
sure
the stripper
was.
Music suddenly.
Yep. Oh man.
Bones arrives. He steps out from behind a bush. Does he ever? With two women, one on either arm, and I cannot even begin to, like, I do not have the words to describe these outfits.
So these outfits are why I chose this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you gave me those screen caps, I was like, oh, I have to do this. Okay, so I'm sure you've seen the Lorax.
Yes.
So you know the truffula trees that they use to make the thneeds. Mm-hmm. That's what their pants look like. And so, like, let me pull this picture up so I can just, like, perfectly explain this. Okay, so they've got leggings, and then it looks like they've taken a fur boa and, like, wrapped it around their hips in, like, a V pattern, and then around one leg in a spiral, and then both of their feet are covered in fur. They've got some kind of furry shoes on, and they've got what look like belly rings, but I don't think that there were belly piercings back then. So I don't know. Maybe they're just Skittles? Like, they're Skittle-sized in their belly buttons, matching.
Color coordinated.
One is pink, one is yellow. Mm-hmm. And then they've got what I've been referring to as furry titty socks.
Mm-hmm.
They're like a boob wrap. It's not like a bra where it's a cup. Like, it looks like it's, like, just stuck to their boob meat, and it's just, like, free-floating, and then they each have feathers in their hair that match, and, like, the pink one kind of looks bunny-ish, and the yellow one kind of looks birdish, and it is a look.
Mm-hmm.
It is a... Oh, my God. What was this show like? Like, this show that he went to? What was it?
Yeah, because
Bones is like...
I want to
know what they,
like,
performed.
This is inspired. Bones says, hey, I'm back. I'm alive. I was never killed. They just dragged me away and healed me. And these women that I fantasied up are based on this cabaret show that I once saw. And you raise a great question. What cabaret
what
show?
What was this show? I want to know, like, was it like the movie Showgirls, where, like, the costumes are over the top and the show is terrible? Or are we going to get, like, a good... you know, oh my gosh, what was it in Showgirls where the MC would, like, go, you know, clap her armpits down and her dress would flop down and her tits would show?
Yes, Henrietta Bazooms.
Is it something like that?
Yeah.
Or are we going to get a volcano like the Gina Gershon show?
The classy show.
Oh my God, I love Gina Gershon.
I don't know, when Bones comes out.
What is this show?
I was just like, did you see this show on Planet Burning Man? Because those costumes, they're like the fake fur costumes that, like, stores sell out. Like, fabric stores are, like, out of fur for all of July and August because everybody's getting their Burning Man costumes together.
100%. Mm-hmm. Yes. Like, it is. Was this an instance where somebody took their costume from work for this episode, or did they make this for this episode? Because I want to know what it was borrowed from, if they borrowed it. That's not Ice Capades, unless it's Ice Capades After Dark. But, like...
It's Cirque du Soleil, which didn't exist.
Well, I mean, or what was their Vegas show where they get naked? It's like Q or something.
There was something like something to Paris, or it, like... I only know this because
Elvira...
I thought
it was just a letter. Oh, my God.
Oh. when she first went to Vegas as, like, a teenager, there was some, like, French... strip show that Elvira Cassandra, when before she was Elvira, saw that, like, inspired her showgirl career, and it was something like Paris Review or something like that.
There's a Cirque du Soleil show that is adult, and it's something like Q or M or something like that.
Q.
But, like, it's done by Cirque du Soleil.
Okay, I was wondering, like, it's the end of the episode. They only appear for, like, a couple seconds. And I was like, did they just run out of time? Because I could totally see somebody being like, grab some tights, glue some feather boas to something. Good enough. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we've got Barrows and she's just like, hey, I'm on vacation too. He's like, oh yeah, I did waste this whole episode wooing you. All right, showgirls, be free. And, like, shuts them off to the other men. And, like, Spock is fully like, oh, I think I'll pass. Thank you, though.
That's okay. Maybe we can discuss philosophy or something.
Yeah. Like, it is such a short, strange scene. And it is, like, I feel like it fully encompasses how absolutely batshit bonkers this episode is.
It's so Gene. Like, that ending is so, like, Gene Roddenberry, like, turns out the whole time I just wanted to be horny.
Yep. I mean, the moral of the story is, what about my penis?
But also, it's the other thing that is so Gene is, like, it's such a specific flavor of horny.
It's very weird.
It's not, like, you know, we're spending so much time talking about, like, the cabaret. And, like, what the hell was that cabaret? If it was just, like, you know, a quote-unquote normal, like, commercially viable, some form of, like, whatever was, like, a sexy look in the 60s. Like, if they were dressed as I Dream of Jeannie or something like that.
That would make more sense to me. But I wonder, like, was this supposed to just look alien?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, if it was supposed to just look alien, why do they have such, like, 60s hair?
Yeah.
Do more. Like, just, yeah. It's already bananas. Make it more bananas. Give one of them yellow hair and one of them pink hair.
I was thinking, like, when McCoy says, like, oh, they're from a little cabaret I know on Rigel 2. There are these two girls in a chorus line. I was, like, looking at the costumes, I'm like, McCoy, I don't know how to tell you this. Those are drag queens. Those looks. The big fur, like, anyone who has color-coordinated boas, McCoy. So maybe, like, appropriate that you handed them off to Sulu and Spock, because...
Oh, that's funny.
They'll enjoy themselves. Anyway, so then... The planet is deemed safe. It's a safe place to have some fantasies come true. Nothing will permanently damage you, except for psychologically, I guess.
I mean, the planet can't give you an STD.
And then we've got our little wrap-up back on the bridge at the end of their shore leave time. There's just this very weird moment where Kirk's in his uncomfortable throne, McCoy standing next to him, Spock's kind of glancing, like giving them side-eye, and he's like, did you enjoy your rest? Spock says, did you enjoy your rest? And Bones and Kirk are just like cackling at each other. Indeed, we did. And it's just like a lot of laughing. It's like the end of A Murder, She Wrote, where everybody's just like looking at each other and laughing.
What? Why?
It was such weird energy. Like, and as it's like fading out, and I'm like, is there going to be a line of dialogue here? Nope, nope. They're just laughing. Okay. They fucked.
Oh,
that's what that laugh means. Indeed, we did enjoy ourselves.
They fucked the shit out of that entire planet.
Yes, everything that moved on that planet, and many things that didn't. Yeah.
Oh, no.
The samurai, Finnegan, the flowers, everything.
Oh, Finnegan got it given to him.
Yeah. Finnegan was, yeah, Finnegan's all used up. They're going to have Finnegan's wake, because he...
out of here.
He was rode hard and put to bed.
God damn it.
end of episode.
Oh my God. That was so much episode.
Yes.
So much episode. Just so many things happened.
All right. Now it's time for the conundrum, or at least it would be if this episode had one. This is the part of the podcast episode where we normally take the difficult choice that the characters confront in this episode and put ourselves in their places. But there really isn't one in this episode.
No.
So I guess for this one, we'll just ask, like, what would you do? Like, if you were on planet shore leave and you could generate any relaxing scenario, what would it be? And I think bonus credit if it's something from classic literature, because that seems to be where all the characters' minds go.
I mean, I know I personally would do Alice. Like I said earlier, I love Alice in Wonderland. I think that it would be cool to go somewhere so weird. Plus, I'm an active vacationer. I'm not one of those people who likes to just sit and relax, because I feel like if you're going to go somewhere, why sit around?
You're not a Spock.
No, I want to go hiking. I want to collect rocks. I want to pet every dog. I want to, I don't know, get high with a caterpillar, hang out with a bunch of weirdos. Like, yeah.
That, honestly, that sounds great. Like, is there an Alice in Wonderland character that you'd really want to meet?
I don't know. Cause I think the Mad Hatter would stress me out. Maybe the March Hare. March Hare seems more chill. I mean, because he's...
Chill? Wait. Isn't he, like, super, like, active and bouncing off the walls?
Disney version.
Oh, yeah, you're right. That's what I'm thinking of.
In comparison to the Mad Hatter, like, I want a little bit of edge, but don't stress me out.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. Or, I don't know. I think I could chill with the Red Queen.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think I could be on
don't
her level.
Don't say the wrong thing.
I won't. She better not either. I'll fight her.
Okay. Actually, I love that. It's you and the Red Queen in, like, a battle of will.
Yeah, let's do it. What about
Perfect.
Yeah, where would you go? What would you do?
Honestly, I like the Alice in Wonderland vacation. I like the White Rabbit as like a guide through like the whole realm, but I think actually what it would be for me is the Hobbit. I would be into I want to go to the Shire. They have great parties. They have like relaxing farmland, they have nice gardens and forests and streams and things.
Oh man, that's like, it's a fantasy vacation, but also a little hipstery. I love it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, exactly. Like, I want to tour the brew pubs of the Shire.
Farm to table.
Yes. Yeah.
Could, like, I don't know, make a yurt.
Yes. Oh, perfect. Perfect. Live in a little hole in the ground. This is like my ideal, honestly. So my partner James and I have talked about how we would love to live underground. Like, cute. Our dream is a subterranean home. We've like seriously talked about like what would be required to build an underground home, because this is, see, like,
we want an old warehouse.
Ooh. Also, yes, just whatever it is, like, as long as it's not meant to be a house, that's what we want to live in.
Well, you know those, what is it, the, like, dilapidated building porn, where it's just, like, buildings that were beautiful, and now they've been reclaimed by the land, so it's, like, real industrial looking, real civilized, and then there's just vines and stuff inside?
Yeah.
That's where I want to live.
Okay. Someplace post-apocalyptic.
Yes, but whimsical.
Okay, yeah, post-apocalyptic whimsical. You don't have to worry about, like, marauding gangs. You just,
no,
like...
no, everyone's just trying their best.
Okay, I like that. I like that. That sounds good.
Oh, man, we're good at this vacation.
We are. We should be vacation planners for places that don't actually exist.
Virtual vacation. That'll be a real thing someday.
Okay, yeah. No, I'm down for that. Virtual vacations. Perfect.
I love it.
All right, now time for the dress-up dice with a minor modification. This is the part of the episode where we roll the dice to choose a particular kind of event at random, and we pick a outfit from this episode that we would wear to that event, and we're swapping one of them out this time. Number 8 on the list of potential events was jury duty, and that one's a little boring. So we're swapping that out with hosting a TV show. So if we roll number 8... we'll get to pick what kind of TV show and what outfit we would wear to it. So,
I think you're first this time.
Okay. I will roll the dice. Here we go. And it's a 7. Ooh, an art gallery opening.
Oh, you can go to town.
Oh, man. I mean, I was really ready to, like, just pick the rabbit for whatever it happened to be, but I don't know that one particularly works. An art gallery opening.
If it was like an Andy Warhol, you know, style, his crew, an opening, that would be very fitting.
I'm kind of feeling Finnegan's sparkly tunic with a tasteful little brooch on the side. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's just like the sparkles enough to catch the eye and for everybody to be like, oh, who's that? Who's that? What's that person doing? Who? Ooh, that's somebody. That must be someone. I'm into the holographic Finnegan shirt.
Okay. Okay. I could see that. That's very tasteful. Very high society.
Yes.
All right. Here I go. 3, which is prom.
Mm.
See, you know, I'm going to get designery about it. Like, I almost want to take the princess dress, but I want to take the flowers from Ruth's dress and, like, redistribute them along the décolletage of the princess dress.
Okay.
Right?
Okay, so you've
got
a
little,
like,
bit of a ruby rod thing going on?
Yes, yes. So, yeah, like a low-cut princess dress with, like, the floral edge?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's very pretty. Would you wear the hat, too?
Oh.
To prom. Princess dress to prom.
No, what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn it upside down, and I'm going to put a ribbon on it, and that's going to be my purse.
Ooh. Okay.
You know I love converting a thing.
That's not bad. I like, that's going to turn some heads.
Uh-huh. I win prom.
I like the image of you, like, putting on the princess dress and then seeing Ruth just, like, standing off to the side, like, she's also going to the prom. And you're like, give me that. And you just, like, rip the flowers.
Well, she didn't have a date.
That's true. She's just, like, off by herself. Who's she got to impress?
Yep, Kirk left her.
Poor Ruth. This is the one episode that she appears in, that character ever appears in. She's in one of the novels, I think, but
really?
She never came up before. She never comes back.
Bizarre. Okay. Yeah. She was very important then. You know he just liked her because her dress was see-through.
I mean, that does... leaves little to the imagination.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that'll just about do it. Next time, we are watching Court Martial. Captain Kirk stands trial on charges of criminal negligence after jettisoning an occupied research pod during an emergency. So go ahead and watch Court Martial to follow along on the next episode. An occupied research pod. Honestly, that's a bit of a tongue twister.
It is. Well, that's okay.
I object to that description. And not just because I fucked it up a couple times in the prior recordings that we're not going to use. All right. That'll just about do it for us. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Tell us what you would create on your shore leave planet. What piece of classic literature would you journey into for your vacation? Yeah.
I want them to let us know.
You can tweet at me, at Matt Baume, M-A-T-T-B-A-U-M-E.
And I'm at the Samantha Ray, R-E-I.
All right. We are looking forward to hearing from you folks. Go ahead and enjoy your watch of Court Martial, and we will see you next time. But we won't actually see you. We'll just talk to you. All right. Actually, bye.
Bye.
Thanks to Teal Sather for cover art and Ivy Faye for music.